What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. I'm your host, Will Brinson. This is CBS Sports' daily NFL podcast. If you're listening right now, it's Thursday, April 11th, which means it's the Masters. Masters may not have started just yet, but they're going to start soon, depending on when you're listening on Thursday. And if you want to get 24/7 coverage of the Masters, direct streaming access on your phone, what you need to do is head on over to cbssports.com/masters first cut, or download the CBS Sports app. We have everything you could possibly need to watch when it comes to the Masters. Four different streams, including the two feature groups, Amen Corner, coverage of holes 15 and 16. And the best part, it's 100% free. You fire it up. Jim Nantz is going to layer that velvet on your ears. You're going to hear the birds chirping. You're going to feel the azaleas blooming. It's going to be incredible. And make sure to check out our buddy Kyle Porter, friend of the program on CBS Sports HQ. It's our free 24-hour sports news network. He will be reporting live from Augusta National all week long. CBSSports.com/masters first cut. I don't know if Brady Quinn is joining me today because, Brady is the best and Brady comes on the show once a week.
I'm also
an avid golfer.
You
brought me on to give you a quick hot take on the Masters. And so here's what I've got for you.
Okay.
If you want to look this up, go ahead. Tiger's not finishing within the top 10. If you're looking for someone, that I think is, my favorite, who I think is going to win, give me Cooch. I think Masters is going to win.
Wow.
That's what I'm kind of putting my money on. I know. You can go with some of the other guys, or Fowler, or, you know, Koepka, whoever you want. But, you know, Koepka, he lost a bunch of weight for that ESPN body issue. I don't know if he's going to be playing the same, man. So I like the Cooch. I think it would be great to see him come out with the win in the Masters. But that's my pick, and that's how I see it working out.
Okay, we're not going to make this a Masters podcast, but it is Masters Thursday, so we're going to take a minute here to discuss. If you don't like it, don't tweet me, don't leave a bad review, just fast forward, hit the fast forward 15-second button. So the thing with Kuchar, the two things that bother me, one, maybe sort of an a-hole with the whole tipping thing with the caddy, and two, I don't know that I love how he performs on Sunday under the gun. Feels like sometimes he'll sort of clinch up a little bit, and I don't know how he will handle the pressure of leading the Masters, but I think he will. He's been unbelievable around the green and in terms of strokes gained and greens irregulation all year long. So I like where your head's at in terms of how he'll play.
Can I just say something in regards to tipping? I mean, look, I work the crappy jobs, all right? I'll say it. I work the jobs. I worked at a place called the Bogan as a busboy. I ran food service for Embassy Suites, running up to for room service, have all sorts of stories from that. I worked the crappy jobs. And you know what I realized is no matter how much I made in tips or what I made for my hourly wage, that's not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And, you know, in regards to caddies and all that, one, they're basically there because they're facilitating the guy that's keeping them there, the player that they're working for. So I could care less about, you know, people getting on guys about not tipping enough or this or that, because I always feel like in the first place, it's a courtesy. And if you're upset about the tips you're getting, get a different career, okay? Because usually a caddy's a different case. But most jobs, they shouldn't be necessarily reliant on tips for the rest of your life, okay? Those are jobs where you're kind of young and transitioning, or maybe just in transition in general. So I hate to get on a soapbox and go into that spiel, but that doesn't bother me about Cooch or Tiger Woods or whoever else as much as I think it did maybe bother some other people.
Okay, that's all right. And look, in fairness to Kuchar, they had a predetermined agreement, and Kuchar paid him based on that agreement. And then, you know,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he honored his. Now, I personally think he could have gone a little bit above and beyond what they agreed to because he won for the first time in a long time. But we don't need to rehash all of that. Have you been to the Masters before?
I'm not. And actually, I'm more the type of person that I would rather go play golf at a local muni course than just go to walk around at the Masters. Look, I love a great lawn as much as anyone else, but if I'm not there participating, I would probably just be there getting blacked out drunk. And so it wouldn't matter where I'm at. You know, I could be in a desert for all it matters, or in Augusta. So that's usually my take with it. I was always like that as a kid. I always want to be outside playing. wasn't necessarily one to be like, oh, I'd rather go sit in the stands and watch the game. I want to be out there playing. So I still feel like that to this day.
I've been twice, as my own, as a spectator, not as a part of a CBS thing. Although I may see if, I don't know if anybody bosses are listening, let me know if I can work it into my deal where I get to go as a spectator or even work. I'll even cover the Masters as part of my next contract. But it's pretty awesome, man. I mean, you feel like it's you don't feel crowded. You do feel like it's a time portal. I would actually liken it in a little bit of a way, to going to Notre Dame. Cause you feel like you're, for the first time, it's old hat for you, but I mean, the first time I got in on the Notre Dame campus, it's like, wow, this is like a time portal and it's very bizarre. I know Kyle Porter wrote about this on CBSSports.com, but there's sort of an appreciation that you can't take your phone still because a lot of the PGA Tour events will let you do it now. And so you do sort of soak in the whole experience. The beer is cheap. The pimento cheese is cheap. It's fantastic. Egg salad. You know, they got these delicious macadamia cookies and peach ice cream. The whole thing is pretty cool. But I mean, it's a lot of walking, but I would go back in a heartbeat if I could. I will take, I'm going to take to win. I will say that, is Justin Rose too obvious? Is that too obvious?
No, it's not obvious. I think it's a good call. I mean, I would say maybe one of the favorites, but yeah, no, I like that pick. It's a good call.
Off the radar guy in the vein of Matt Kuchar. And look, I respect you going Kuch. I will go, Tony Finau, who, I think. Like,
ooh. Yeah. I like Tony.
Yeah. Remember he broke his, ankle or sprained his ankle celebrating a hole in one during the par three tournament last year. And everybody's like, this clown's an idiot. And then he still finished, top five. So I think he's got the experience there, understands the grind, could make a leap. I'm with you on Koepka. I don't like the losing weight thing. And then the other thing I saw, I got an alert from the PGA Tour, I think. Just worth noting is people maybe last second filling out their various pools and whatnot. I think Jordan Spieth is changing up his putting grip. It's a guy who's a little lost. You don't do that before the Masters, man.
No, you don't do that before the Masters. I mean, literally, look, you don't change anything before the Masters.
You don't change your putting grip before the member. Like, you just don't do it.
Yeah, you don't change your underwear. You don't change anything before the Masters. If you feel like you've got things going the right direction, or even if it's not, maybe still you play out of your mind. But you're not. You should be working on things and thinking you're going to make the cut. That scares me. A couple other picks outside of Kuch, who I think is going to win. Rooting for Ricky Fowler, met him, his fiance, Allison Stokey.
Wow.
Justin Thomas. So those two guys outside of Kuch, who I'm kind of rooting for.
Wow. So did you hang out with Ricky Fowler?
Well, we were kind of sitting in a park. We went to a hockey game and we were sitting in like a certain little lounge section.
VIP, no doubt.
You could call it that. My buddy and I and another couple of ours, we had drank a decent amount. So it was like they kind of came over in our area and they were probably more watching us and laughing at us than anything else. But we talked for a little bit. Justin Thomas is a really cool dude, too. I really appreciated him. So those guys are great guys, rooting for them. But yeah, we kind of hung out for a minute with them. I don't remember a whole lot from it. but yeah, that was just more of. But my brother-in-law was playing, so I was more paying attention to the hockey game and having some beers. So.
Wait, your brother-in-law is a hockey player?
Yeah, my brother-in-law is Jack Johnson for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
What? Is that your wife's brother? Is that how's this working here? How many athletes?
Yeah, no, that's my little sister's husband.
Wait, so is it your older sister's husband who is? AJ Hawk, right? Am I crazy here? What am I thinking? Who's your in one of your brother-in-laws a football player?
Yeah, AJ Hawk.
Yeah. All right. So you have multiple professional athlete in-laws?
Yes, correct.
That's pretty crazy. That's cool. All right. Good for you. Well, man, that's cool that you're at a God, I mean, my brother-in-law's a funeral director, so I got that going for me.
You know what? By the way, I would love to be in that business. So if he's ever looking at selling, please let me know because people are always dying, buddy.
Yeah, that's right. He's every holiday. I'm like, hey, to go to my father-in-law. I'm like, hey, Heilig, how's it going? Business killing it as usual. and he's like, wow, Will.
Business, yeah.
Great.
It's booming. I'd be dying to get involved in that business.
Yeah. His response is usually like, yeah, it's probably better than the blogging business, Will. What's going on? No, I'm just kidding. Hi, Alex's a great dude. Anyway, let's get into some football talk. Wow, that went longer than I thought. 10 minutes in, and we're Masters talk. But you know what? It's Masters Thursday. I don't care, Brady. It's a slow time in the NFL. There's been some drama. We don't want to rehash the whole Steelers thing, the whole Packers thing, or even the whole Kyler Murray thing. But I do think something that Cliff Kingsbury said this week was very interesting, and that was that he was asked specifically, can Josh Rosen work in his offense? And I think it's kind of a dumb thing to, I mean, it's not a dumb question to ask. It's a legitimate question to ask. And I'm actually just going to ask you the question. But of course he can, like, you don't have to be a fast mobile quarterback to work in the air raid. So how exactly, Brady, would Josh Rosen fit with Cliff Kingsbury's system? And do you think it's a good fit?
I think it's a good fit. I think people fail to realize what was Cliff Kingsbury. He was a dropback quarterback.
Yeah.
So, and he played within the system. So was Graham Harrell. So was pretty much every single other quarterback that's played in the air raid system, or even Gardner Minshew, who was up in Washington State this past year and led the led college football in yards. I mean, look at who he even had this past season too. McLean, I think was the young man's last name, the lefty I got hurt. Then Alan Bowman came in as a freshman. He was a pocket passer. I mean, the entire offense has been based upon pocket passes. In fact, you could look at who's played the air raid system and make the case that Josh Rosen's actually the better fit than Kyler Murray is. I just think people look at the air raid now and they think, oh, spread, because you see a lot of spread formations. And you think about Kyler Murray playing within that system and his ability to run with a field that's spread out and in some of those open running lanes, even in the passing game. And then you see why, you know, people think it would make sense. So both quarterbacks can play and excel within the system. I don't personally feel like, you know, they'd be handicapped with Josh Rosen. And to be quite honest with you, I think Josh Rosen's probably a little bit safer within the offense than Murray is, only because he's got NFL experience so far. And looking at the history of NFL quarterbacks, they tend to be more guys who have a skill set of Josh Rosen than guys who have the skill set of Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And the other thing that I think that really goes under the radar here is that while Cliff Kingsbury and Josh Rosen have not been necessarily working hand in hand, I mean, Josh Rosen has a huge leg up in terms of being in, can he at least study the tendencies of an air raid offense right now. I doubt Kyler Murray is worrying about that because he's worried about his, you know, his draft status. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like there's at least, you know, you have a little bit of a head start, and you aren't making, as a second year quarterback, a leap into the NFL from college. You have taken that step. You've been bloodied and battered along the way. You've learned a lot of lessons. I mean, I know, you know, you know this as a former NFL quarterback. It's not that first, you know, there is a transition stage. And I think that as much as we've seen guys like, Baker Mayfield adjust quickly, or, you know, Andrew Luck or whoever it is, I mean, it's not guaranteed that Kyler Murray's going to have instant success. And to me, the Cardinals would be running a big risk by going with a guy who has no prior experience in the NFL.
Right. I mean, that's always the risk you run anytime you draft a first round quarterback, or any, you know, rookie quarterback for that matter. But I think the thing that you have to understand is Kyler Murray also has experience in the system. Lincoln Riley, had played and really, you know, coached, kind of derived from that from his time at Texas Tech. And he runs a version of that from what he had at Eastern Carolina and then what he brought to Oklahoma, where now he is the head coach. But, you know, there's definitely similarities between the system. He's obviously implemented more quarterback run game because of the skill set of Kyler Murray. At least this past year, you saw that a lot more. And going back to Kyler Murray's days running a spread system in high school, and even when Cliff Kingsbury was recruiting him back then, I think there's going to be similarities. So I don't necessarily think you could say that, well, this is going to be all foreign to Kyler Murray. Yes, he has other things on his plate, but I also think he's going to be very familiar with that system if they were indeed, you know, take him in number one overall.
I don't know. I just keep going back and forth. Where's your head at on this right now? What do you think is going to happen with that first overall pick? I mean, and look, you might not know, but I'm just curious where you think the wind is blowing. I know Pete Prisco thinks, like, Jason Lockenford thinks they're definitely going Kyler Murray. Pete Prisco thinks they're sort of backing off Kyler Murray at number one. I don't think anybody knows for sure, and maybe the Cardinals don't even know for sure.
Yeah, so I don't think they know for sure right now. because we still have 2 weeks until the draft, right?
Yep.
Or somewhere around that time. And what could happen between now and then, someone gives you a one and something else for Josh Rosen. And you might say, okay, we're good. Because you've got the potential to draft Kyler Murray, who you also think could fit. Or someone might say to you, you know what, we really want Kyler Murray, or maybe we want one of these quarterbacks and we want to ensure that we get him, so we're going to move up and draft him number one overall. And someone might give you something for that, which now takes out your ability to take Kyler Murray, right?
Yeah.
And so those two things could easily play themselves out. Deadlines do deals. We're not to that deadline of the first round of the draft yet. So until we get to that point, until there's we get closer to that date, I don't think that they probably even have their mind made up of what they're going to do, because there might be an offer on the table right now for Josh Rosen. And they might say, you know what, we know what we're going to do with the number one overall pick. And, you know, we're waiting to see if we can get somebody who's going to sweeten the offer. And until we get closer to that date, we're not going to exercise it. Because one thing we do know this, you don't have as much leverage if you're the Cardinals. If you draft Kyler Murray number one overall, because everyone knows then you have to trade Josh Rosen.
Sure.
Unless you want to go into this first season with both. And either, A, hope you get a starting quarterback hurt and someone wants to trade for Josh Rosen when they're in despair before the season, a la the Minnesota Vikings trading for Sam Bradford when he was with the Eagles.
Yep.
Or they hold on him for a year, and then after this upcoming season, they look to try to make a trade for him then. Which, you know, really, again, doesn't make a ton of sense, because that next year's draft class is supposed to be better with the likes of Justin Herbert out at Oregon, Tua Tagovailoa, who would be draft eligible, as well as Jake Fromm from Alabama and Georgia, respectively.
And by the way, here is Cliff Kingsbury's actual quote via ESPN.com on Josh Rosen. He is a much, much better player than I was. I was pretty athletic back in my day, Kingsbury said. I was a pocket passer. Josh can move. He can extend plays more than people think. He has a great tennis background, very athletic. And you don't have to be a 4-3 guy. You just have to be able to move off the spot, keep your eyes downfield, and extend the play enough for those guys to uncover. And when you watch the tape, he does a good job of that. So, I mean, I do think, like, when you hear, like, they're clearly still evaluating all this, right? I mean, like, they're not – I don't know. It's just it's wild that it's this fluid leading up to the draft. But anyway, we don't want to linger too long on that, because we will have an entire 2 weeks of draft speculation leading up to that before the draft actually happens. So instead, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll break down some more stuff that's happening around the NFL.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features, like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating, so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads, so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
The Patriots did nothing during free agency. People freaked out. They didn't sign anybody. They don't have any weapons. Ah, what are they going to do? And now they've gone out. Rob Gronkowski left. They have gone out today and landed Alshon Safarian Jenkins. And there's a report that they're also looking at Demaryius Thomas and T.J. Yeldon. It's pretty wild how the Patriots sit back and then do smart stuff once the season. You know what I mean? Like they sit back, everybody freaks out that they're not doing the right thing. Don't you think that's the better way to handle free agency in the NFL?
Sure. I think, look, here's the bottom line. When Bill Belichick has tried to draft wide receivers, which he hasn't taken many, like I can't even think of one in the first round, but even looking at like Dobson, for example, I think is the highest he's taken in a while in the second round. I mean, look, I think over the course of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, I think he's actually drafted more quarterbacks in higher rounds than he has wide receivers. You know, Nick Dobson's the only one I can think of in the second round. And outside of that, you've seen a lot of like fourth and fifth and sixth, or fourth and sixth and seventh round wide receivers for the most part. And I think the reason being is this: it's really, really hard to evaluate quarterbacks, which then that makes it hard to evaluate wide receivers, especially in some of these spread systems that they run. And you know who else is hard to evaluate? The offensive linemen coming out of college football. And then it kind of gets harder to develop, to look at the edge rushers and the cornerbacks too sometimes to figure out if they're going to work or not. But I think so it's easier to look at interior defensive linemen. It's easier to look at some other positions, maybe cornerback, not so much. Maybe it is easier to actually look at, but I think personally, because of the tie to the quarterbacks, wide receivers are even difficult to evaluate. So why would you want to waste a high round draft pick on a guy that may take some take him a while to mature and ultimately be the receiver you want? And by that point in time, maybe you don't want to pay him what you want to pay him. So it seems like that seems to be a greater strategy for them, is bring in a guy who's kind of already showcased his ability, what he can do. Demaryius Thomas makes a lot of sense. He was a first round draft pick who was taken by Josh McDaniels back when he was head coach for the Denver Broncos. So he's going to be familiar with the scheme and he's going to be familiar with the player. And then TJ Yeldon, you know, this is a typical guy along with Austin Seferian Jenkins, who has talent, has ability, maybe hasn't showcased it up to the level that people thought, but that's what New England does. They bring guys in, they put them in positions where they can succeed, and then they get those guys to execute very, very consistently well, and then they just win Super Bowls with them. So I would be shocked if Austin Seferian Jenkins doesn't end up being part of this team and maybe replicating what he did a couple years ago when he caught 50 balls and three touchdowns for the New York Jets and maybe his best season of his career. I would be shocked if that didn't happen. Or TJ Yeldon didn't somehow be a part of this running back group and add in another element to it, because that's typically what New England does. And again, they've got a ton of draft picks. We'll see what they do with it. But I don't necessarily think they're going to be spending any high draft capital on wide receivers.
Okay. Yeah, they have not been great about unearthing them in the draft. And it's just tough to adjust to Tom Brady right off the bat. Okay. So Aaron Rodgers, again, we've talked about this at length, but I do think that I'm curious, first of all, how do you think that Aaron Rodgers is going to fare in Matt LaFleur's offense? I know that there's been a lot of buzz previously that Aaron Rodgers doesn't like motion, doesn't like bunch formations, doesn't like all the doodads that go with it. And Matt LaFleur has explicitly said he's going to use more motion. He's going to use more bunch formations. And that Aaron Rodgers said Matt LaFleur is the boss. How do you see that relationship unfolding and Rodgers, like operational or functional operationality? Is that a thing? Operational functionality?
You just made that up.
Operational functionality. That is a real thing. How do you think that'll work inside the offense?
There's going to be some friction. Look, there's going to be a blend of what Aaron likes to do within Matt's offense and what he doesn't like to do. That's any offense. That's any play caller. I think the thing where Aaron may be more open to them using more bunches, stacks, motion, things like that, is he might be more open to it because outside of Davante Adams, I don't know how many guys in the roster can ultimately separate and get open on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And, he came very forthcoming recently about some of the injuries he dealt with and played with last season. And maybe that'll change his tune, because sometimes those injuries come when you hang on to the football. And when you have to hang on to the football, it's because guys can't separate and get open. And so if you have an offensive mind who can help you with formations, with the bunches and stacks and motion to help get guys open, you're probably better off doing that, especially with their current roster and looking at guys like Jamon Moore, Valdez Scantling, and Equanimous St. Brown, the guys outside of what they have in Davante Adams. And granted, don't get me wrong, they've got good tight ends. They've got Jimmy Graham still. Their running backs like Aaron Jones, he can catch on the backfield too. But still, they tend to be more of an 11 personnel team and then really isolate those guys and see who can get open. I really only see one or two guys who can do that on a consistent basis in Graham and Adams. So I think he needs to be more open to it. I think he probably will. And why not? There's nothing wrong with that. So, but there'll be some friction between these two. I think there always is. And it'll be interesting to see how Matt LaFleur handles it, because at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers is the pain man. He's won a Super Bowl. I think we all realize how good he is. And it's more Matt LaFleur who's trying to prove himself. And, how he handles that relationship will probably go a long way in how far this team can go. Because I just think the dynamic in general for Matt LaFleur in his first year being a head coach, it's not only how you handle Aaron Rodgers, as your most important task, just managing your players. It's also how you manage your coaching staff. I mean, this structure is probably going to look similar to what Sean McVay is doing, given the roots for LaFleur working under McVay, but also because of Mike Pettine. Mike Pettine was a former head coach. I think you can rely on him to take care of the defense and that personnel, and then allow yourself to focus on offense, especially during the course of the game when you're making those in-game adjustments. So, you know, it's not all about Aaron Rodgers, but a heavy portion of it is. And I don't think it's going to be the smoothest road, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing either. I think there's sometimes some good constructive conflict that you can enter into with a head coach and a play caller when you're a quarterback, and sometimes come out on the other end where things work out better than maybe they were going into it.
Curious, what do you think about, I mean, again, I don't want to rehash the whole Mike McCarthy thing, but Rodgers was asked about it again on Wednesday, and he was asked by reporters specifically if he had spoken with Mike McCarthy after the Bleacher Report article from Ty Dunn was published. Rodgers said, "I'm not going to answer that," and then added, "I stand by everything I said." He called it a smear attack and ripped on Ty Dunn, and said, "I've heard from 100-plus former teammates and coaches and current teammates and coaches, and that's fun, especially some of the guys you haven't heard from in a while checking in and encouraging you. What were your thoughts? What are your general thoughts on the whole thing here?"
Yeah, look, I'll be very open and honest. I reached out to him too and kind of told him I thought it was BS. I know Aaron a little bit, and I think – I don't know the writer, and I'm not going to try to disparage him. I just think when you look at the way the article was constructed, if you actually just extrapolate Greg Jennings' comments to Michael Finley's comments, they tend to be angled. They tend to have a direction where they are trying to do something from this, right? And Greg Jennings is transitioning his career where, you know, people probably want to hear what he has to say about Aaron Rodgers, and they know they're not going to be the nicest things because of how their breakup and relationship was. And look, I'd be frustrated too if I was Greg Jennings, and I'd probably, if I was him, look back on my career and wonder, I wonder if I maybe should have just bit my tongue and made things work with Green Bay. Because at the end of the day, was Greg Jennings a better wide receiver in Minnesota than he was in Green Bay?
Yeah.
No.
In Green Bay. Yeah, he's better in Green Bay than Minnesota. Right. Of course.
Right. And so because of that, I think there might be a little bit of bitterness too that he doesn't want to necessarily recognize that he wasn't as good of a wide receiver without Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback. So, to me, it was angled, it was slanted, and I think the way the article was constructed by Tyler Dunn, it was good enough to provide balance, because you'd hear this negative from Jermichael Finley, or you'd hear from Greg Jennings, but then you'd see the balance of it with a former player like Ryan Grant, who obviously didn't have any issues with Aaron Rodgers. So my whole thing is, you know, when you're writing an article like that, it's all good and great this time of year because you need something to put out there. But at the end of the day, there wasn't one quote from Aaron Rodgers. There wasn't one quote from Mike McCarthy. All you had was some other unnamed sources, too, who were trying to bash him. And that just – it seems convenient for a group or a front office and organization that decided to move on from the guy, even though he was about as successful as any head coach they've had since, what, Curly Lambeau, and also brought them a Super Bowl. So I thought the you know, article, even the timing of it when it came out right after Rob Domofsky had – his piece on Mike McCarthy, I thought it was just kind of interesting how that all worked out. And I sided with the players in this regard. I think it was angled. It was kind of a smear campaign, and it was for people trying to make a name for themselves, whether it's Tyler Dunn or, you know, Greg Jennings or Jermichael Finley, because there seemed like there was more motivation behind the article and those guys' negative comments than really the point of the article itself. I'm not sure what it was, whether Aaron Rodgers didn't respect Mike McCarthy or not. The only two people who ultimately know that are those two guys, and neither of them was quoted in the article. And I think that just tells you enough in itself of what people think of Tyler Dunn.
It bothers me that every time there's an article, this is Aaron Rodgers, that it's the same two people. At what point do you move on? You talk about me being sensitive and petty. At what point do you move on or stop telling the same stories? I think there's a little bit of truth to that, too. It's like, we get it, Greg Jennings. You don't like the Packers and Aaron Rodgers and the way that things ended, and you're willing to torch him publicly with your name on. I respect. He's at least putting his name on it and going out there and doing it, right? I mean, He's not doing it side-handed.
But isn't that also his position within being an analyst or a broadcaster now?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
he has to put his name on it. That's his job, and so he understands that portion of it. But I also think there's, to some degree, with what Aaron's saying is, and what you're saying is, he's a one-trick pony right now. You know, outside of that, what else, you know, really can you bring to the table? And so
that can only take you so far in your career. And that's where I'll be curious to kind of see where he goes from here and what happens from this, or if he'll just kind of be another guy who's got that one gripe with a player that he's trying to live off of. I don't think that'll take you very far. And that, again, that's why I side more with Aaron in this regard, because throughout the entire process, you know, you didn't hear him make these sorts of comments or leak stuff out about Mike McCarthy. And he was defensive of Mike to some degree too. And I think for people saying, like, just because he doesn't want to answer whether or not they've talked, you know, bottom line is he's a private person. You know, he doesn't talk about a lot of the things that go on in his personal life that other people have been willing to air or leak out into the media, whether it's with his family or dating life or whatever else is going on. So I tend to be more on the side of Aaron for a number of reasons, but also just for the way in which he's kind of handled a lot of the BS that's been on the outside and really hasn't given much time of day or energy to it. And I think that's a good thing for the Packers moving forward, because that's what they are doing. They're all moving forward, and that's all that matters now.
If you had to pick one person to go to a hockey game with, would you go with Aaron Rodgers or Ricky Fowler?
that answer to that question might get me in trouble. If it's just the guys, for sure, A-Rod. If there's other people, I'll tell you, if Justin Thomas is coming along or anyone else who may have been around, then maybe it's a little bit different story then. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
How about this? Full disclosure, my wife's going to kill me for this, but I had made some comment or reference to Cal, because obviously his fiance was like most famous for being like the pole vaulter at Cal or whatever it was initially.
Yeah, back when
I remember
she was...
this from like a long time ago. Yeah, every guy remembers it.
Yeah.
And as soon as I had posed some question or said something,
then
obviously the question came up later on was, well, how do you know she went to Cal? And I kind of looked at my buddy, my two other buddies with me, and they were like, everyone knows she went to Cal. And that was kind of the end of that conversation.
Oh, my God. So you were like, sorry, like you loved pole vaulting at Cal, right? She's like, yeah, but you can kind of get away with it because you have a wife who's a former Olympic gymnast. You can be like, I'm just, you know, I like to study the fine arts of track and field and gymnastics and really, you know, learn about the roots and the history of the game.
Oh, dude, I mean, I'll be honest. Look, my favorite event in all the Olympics outside of women's gymnastics, especially when Alicia was competing, was track and field. Like, I'm always fascinated by that. I think it's fun to watch that and everything else. Now that had nothing to do with me knowing where she had gone to college, but yeah, no, by the way, I wouldn't phrase the exact same way that you did in regards to her previous time as an athlete. Something about that didn't sound right.
Okay. I'll work on that. I will say that, can you imagine, I don't know if you remember, but the hubbub surrounding, Miss Stokey's, appearance on the internet when she became famous the first time. If that happened in 2019, like the same sort of thing happened in 2019, it would be like on CNN and stuff like that. I mean, it was a pretty big deal back in the day.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I remember being in Cleveland when it happened. So I don't know if it was my rookie year or second year. So like 07, 08, 09, something like that. And it was really before social media platforms became huge.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually think that if you became like an internet sensation, if you will, or viral, if you will, back then, I think it speaks more volumes to then some of the crap that goes on today. Because the people that typically go famous today, like by the end of the day, they're not even the story anymore. Or they are for a second, then it's gone. Like that's more of lasting memories for you. And like, I mean, to this day, you can ask anyone and they could tell you where she participated in track and field in college. I think, again, kudos to Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, and look, I mean, like, that 2007 Washington Post article, teen test internet's lewd track record. I mean, this is like, if this happens in 2019, it is a monster story that, like, the whole internet blows up. Anyway, we're getting way off track once again, which is my specialty. I don't know if you knew that. Jack Del Rio had a lot of stuff to say about the Raiders. And did he have something to say about Russell Wilson? He did, like, this long interview. In fact, oddly enough, with a former Division I gymnast, Brooke Sarasimo, who I clicked on her Twitter account. She's listed as NFL media former D1 gymnast. So, you know, there you go. It all ties it together. I don't know if you know or not. I don't know how tight that gymnast crew is. I assume it's fairly close-knit. But Jack Del Rio He said, first of all, that I love the talent, but Antonio Brown has clearly shown that he's going to be a pain in the ass. You know what? I agree with old Jack on this one. I don't think Jack's wrong. Find the lie.
No, I don't necessarily know that he's wrong in that regard. I think even after getting traded and signing the new deal and looking clean cut and like he wasn't going to be any issues for the Raiders moving forward, now that he's in his new destination and he's got his new contract, you thought it would have ended there, but it didn't. He went to try to figure out a way of drawing up some more discussion via social media with Juju Smith-Schuster. And I think that just led me to think, you know, if this guy, for whatever reason, is going to be catty, he's going to, you know, continue to monitor stuff that, to be quite honest with you, has really no impact on him. I'm not sure why he's looking at, what was it, the Pittsburgh Steelers social media page where they announced that Juju Smith-Schuster was the team MVP for 2018. Like, I'm more surprised that Ben Roethlisberger didn't take a shot at Juju Smith-Schuster on his weekly radio show, at least until that ends, or there wasn't some of the comment made that I was Antonio Brown coming back out of the woodwork to make a comment. So, yeah, he's accurate in that regard. He also talked about being surprised if Russell Wilson's not traded before this season starts from the Seattle Seahawks, which kind of came out of nowhere, caught me off guard. I'm not sure, you know, who's actually going to make that trade. Maybe it is the Oakland Raiders, right? Maybe it's John Gruden trading for Russell Wilson and giving them all those three, first-round picks they've got this year. Maybe that's how they're making that trade happen. I have no idea. I kind of find it odd that he would say that. I try to figure out what the connection is because I don't remember him being overly close with Pete Carroll or John Schneider outside of the fact that Jack Del Rio is a USC alum.
Yeah, that's all. That's
Pete Carroll coach there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe he talked to another team who had talked to the Seahawks about the contract situation with Wilson and discussed a potential trade. So maybe he kind of talked to someone from the other side of it. There's no way if you're John Schneider and Pete Carroll, and especially as that window is closing for probably Pete Carroll as the head coach, I don't think you're any closer to winning a Super Bowl trading away Russell Wilson than building on what you did last year with that young defense and then having a guy like Russell Wilson who's been, you know, a winning quarterback every single year he's started. He's led the league in touchdown passes before. He's gotten better. And he's done that all about while playing behind a crappy offensive line. So it doesn't make any sense to me why Jack Del Rio would say that. But it'll be interesting to see if it does indeed play out.
I think the one logical, it's not logical. I can think of the logic behind the move is that the Seahawks say, all right, we found Russell Wilson in the third round. We won a title by drafting a quarterback and, you know, by building up or using our draft equity on and our free agency equity on defensive players like Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett, who they got on cheap deals and later resigned. So maybe you think we can take the team we have now, invest in other positions, draft a quarterback late, plug him in this, run heavy system and it'll be fine. I disagree with the logic. That's the only possible scenario you can see. I do, however, Brady, think that Russell Wilson is going to want the biggest contract in NFL history for a quarterback above Aaron Rodgers, and the Seahawks won't want to give it to him, and that's going to be sort of the inflection point as we head towards a new CBA.
See, I don't see it the same way. I think they'd be glad to, you know, work out that deal for his services. I think what they don't want to be is the team that goes into a fourth year of guarantees, which we haven't seen yet in a player's contract. Typically, we've seen 3-4 years guaranteed. We saw with Kirk Cousins. We saw with the extension for Aaron Rodgers and how accelerated they made those payments. I think that's what they don't want to do. They don't want to be the team that sets the precedent now for quarterbacks moving forward where they're going to be getting 4 years of guarantees. I think we're going to see a number that's 34 to 36 average annual salary. I think you're going to see a total guarantee around $120 million. Those, to me, I know they come with sticker shock now, but as this salary cap has continued to increase over the course of the next few years, it's not going to be that heavy a percentage of the cap. And in fact, someone threw out the idea of, well, what happens if they tied his compensation to a percentage of the salary cap moving forward?
Yep.
The only issue with that is as the salary cap continues to go higher and higher and higher, depending on if you make that a static number, obviously that number becomes less and less and less. It has to be an escalating number. That would go up with it with time, right? Because it ended up being depending on how you end up structuring it, right? You could get yourself into some trouble there doing it that way. And most contracts escalate anyways with the anticipation of the salary cap moving up. So that's usually built in. You don't have to tie it into a specific percentage because you don't necessarily know if the salary cap's going to go up or what happens when you go into an uncapped year. Then you have to kind of set separate language there for that, because that could very well happen with, a potential work stoppage coming up. So it gets convoluted. It gets a little bit confusing, and that's where I think they'll figure out a way of getting it done. They got it done using this temporary timeline before with the $87.5 million deal. And I don't see any other way of how they move forward with being successful. I think if they don't realize how lucky they got with who they got in the third round, and then they're allowing their ego to get in the way, because it's kind of like the book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. When you read that book and you talk about all the people who have been able to accomplish great things as human beings, they all acknowledge at some point in time they're lucky. They're either born at a point in time where the technology allowed them to become Bill Gates or Paul Allen or whoever else, or they had certain things work their way that allowed them that opportunity where they were able to flourish. So I think they were obviously extremely lucky to end up with Russell Wilson, and it's set them on a course now that allows them to still potentially play for some Super Bowls, I think, in the next 3 or 4 years, if they do indeed extend them.
Yeah, and I, to me, you definitely extend them. By the way, I mean, look at you. You're dropping Aaron Rodgers, Ricky Fowler, sneaking in the fact that you read Outliers. It's a good little checklist podcast for you. All right, let's do something stupid, and then we'll get out of here. Since we're open with the Masters, we'll close with the Masters. Have you by chance seen Patrick Reed's Masters Champions Dinner menu?
No. What did he end up going with? I mean, some of these guys do some – it doesn't look overly appetizing for me. What did he go with?
This is Mr. Patrick Reed went with what is basically
– is he not very well liked on the tour? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, he's not very well liked. And it's – I mean, this is just a – so his opener, you get a choice of – actually, no, I'm just going to start at the top. He's going with a prime bone-in cowboy ribeye topped with herb butter – fish available upon request, mountain trout. His sides are, this is so ridiculous. His sides are macaroni and cheese, corn cream brulee, cream spinach, and steamed broccoli. And then you have a choice of Caesar salad or a wedge salad. This is like this is like Ruth Chris special. We're going to cream everything and make you eat it.
Yeah, I think he's trying to kill off some of his competitors.
That's what I'm
wondering with this new diet for Koepka, what's he going to eat moving forward? He's either going to splurge and pack on a bunch of weight, or he's just going to be eating a bunch of that steamed broccoli and maybe a salad.
I don't think Koepka doesn't have a Masters, right? He just has a U.S. Open and he has two U.S. Opens and one PGA. I think it's only the Champions Dinner, right? Yeah,
I think that's right. So yeah, maybe he's just trying to kill off other guys so they don't have a chance to repeat. But I mean, look, that meal sounds great to me. I don't know what we're having for dinner tonight, but I may have to talk to the wife about changing up some things as far as what we're going to be eating.
What would you do if you were having your Masters champion dinner? So you got to do I mean, I'm never putting you on the spot here, but you got to serve something that's going to be kind of popular with everybody. Can't be out of control. And but it also has to be delicious and represent you as a person.
Right. So I'm a huge fan of Italian food. Mm. And this is in no way indicative of my palate or ability to really understand like cuisine in any way. But I love testing out the chicken parm no matter what Italian restaurant we go to. If they got it, I'm testing it out. Hmm. That's how I'm judging you and your ability to make Italian food. So I would have chicken parm. And I would obviously have the vegetarian option. You can go with the eggplant if you want, right? And I would even actually have another option. You have the ability to get veal. If you want some veal parmesan,
sure,
you can go with that as well. Pick your different spaghetti, right? You can have a variation of spaghetti, if you will, with that. But the main course of the dish kind of stays intact. Salads, I would have a number of options. You got your normal Caesar if you want. Maybe we'll do some other sort of mixed green salad. And then we're going to have your typical burrata and heirloom tomato salad as well as an option. Let's see, for dessert, that's a tough one for me because I love milkshakes. So I'd probably switch it up and have them use Grater's ice cream and then have like a milkshake station where you could potentially have either a milkshake or a malt. If you don't know what a malt is, you just add a malt to milkshake. Malt powder is its own deal. But anyway,
That would be the direction that I think I would go. And that would be kind of indicative of what I like and who I am.
I like that. That's a good choice.
Oh, by the way, yes. We have to have a few bottles of wine. You couldn't go without having, some variations of wine, or varietals of wine.
Some insanely high end bottles. I mean, I assume if you're you don't pay for it. The club pays for it. And plus, like, you got to figure how friggin' good would that Masters chicken parm be? Like, they're going to bring,
oh my God.
I mean, it's going to be incredible. There used to be this restaurant in Raleigh called Brothers Pizza that did this Hillsborough Street special. And it was, I think it was eggplant and veal parmesan together. So like two slices of eggplant and one thing of veal. Oh my God. So good. I wish it was still around. I'd eat it all the time. I might do something a little bit lighter. I would probably do, I think I'd do like some seared tuna. I love a good seared tuna and, maybe some. Is that weird? Is that weird? I love.
I mean, you're weird, but yeah. That look, if it's supposed to be a telling of who you are, then this fits perfectly. Please proceed.
I know. I really like it. I love a good Pittsburgh rare seared piece of awesome tuna. So I would go with that. Maybe do some like wasabi mashed potatoes. What do you think about that? Wasabi mashed potatoes.
And I'm not a big wasabi fan. I think it's the most overrated thing that comes on, comes with sushi and everything else. I've never liked it. I don't know why people like it. Every time they put it in some of their food or that's wasabi something, I'm just like, get it out of here. You're lazy. You wanted to use wasabi in some other way. So I hate it.
Okay. I don't use it on sushi a lot. I used to use it more. I gotta be honest. I love a good steak. My problem is that my wife eats too much steak, and I'm just staked out at this point. So maybe I would even do a salmon.
You're going to get gout, aren't you? That's your worry. You're going to get gout. You're going to have too much steak, too much red wine. You're going to have gout. You're not going to be able to move.
No, my dad and brother both have gout.
There you go.
I'm not getting gout.
It's coming for you.
No, I exercise. I don't eat steak. We would have a lot of red wine though. All right. I didn't give you a good list, but I liked your list so much that I'm just going to keep moving. Good show. Great show. Excited for the Masters. They're happening right now. Make sure you follow Brady on Twitter at 3RD_goal. Make sure you watch him on CBS Sports HQ. You're doing a bunch of stuff with your foundation too. You want to promote your foundation or anything?
Yeah, actually, we've got a really cool event coming up. We're announcing another partnership. So my foundation, the Third Goal Foundation, helps make homes handicap accessible for wounded veterans. But we also put on educational platforms for active service members, men and women. So when they come back from their time in service, when they're looking at transitioning out and continuing the education, starting it or even finishing it, we help put on these two-week intensive courses. Program at Notre Dame we're expanding to another college coming up here soon that we're excited to announce for one of our big fundraising events. This is actually pretty cool. We're having what's called a suitcase party May 3rd in Columbus, Ohio at the MPW hangar there at the John Glenn International Airport. And what it is you pack your suitcase, all right? Everyone comes to the hangar. It's kind of set to be more of a date night. We're going to have some food, hors d'oeuvres, some alcohol. There'll be a band, and we're going to tell you about the partnership. But then we're going to raffle off a private plane to a destination for the weekend for you and one other. And you'll be there until Sunday, and you'll fly back privately. And so that's why you're packing your suitcase, because you may just get whisked away off to whatever destination we're sending you.
Wow, that's cool stuff, man. You're doing good work out there, not just a great – podcast, not just a great media member, great human being as well. Check out Brady.
I appreciate it, buddy.
You
Thank
are.
You.
All right. We'll chat next week. Thanks as always for coming on, Brady.
All right. I'll see you.